for a number of reasons. First of all, in many settings, it's difficult to get political support for improving the prison health conditions. And this is closely linked with prison reform and civil rights of prisoners. In health, there is a particular problem of the coordination of health services between the prison authorities and the civil health authorities. And for conditions such as TB and HIV, where treatment takes a long time, this coordination is quite important because people can be treated partly in prison and partly outside prison. There is a high prevalence of drug-resistant TB in Central Asia, a global problem, but also in this setting, is the coordination of TB and HIV control activities. There is, of course, stigma, fear, and issues to do with the particularities of the situation in prison, the jail hierarchy. And then, finally, there are issues to do with funding and human resource development. How does it come that TB and HIV go together in prisons? Well, first of all, there is HIV-related TB. That's a global issue, and that is well recognized. But there are some additional reasons for these two infections to go together. First of all, there are common risk factors before imprisonment, and they include homelessness, unemployment, migration, and drug use. And also, prisons themselves are a risk factor for both HIV and TB. For TB because of overcrowding, poor ventilation, poor nutrition and stress, and for HIV because of needle sharing and unprotected men having sex with men. This graph shows the TB trends in Europe over the past two or almost three decades. What you see there is the bottom green line is the trend in the European Union before the accession of Romania and Bulgaria, and there you see a declining trend. TB rates are low and they continue to decline. For Europe overall, this is not the case. That's the yellow line in the middle, and in particular in the 18 high priority countries in the WHO Europe region, there's been a tremendous increase over the past two decades with more or less a doubling of the TB rates. The numbers then are on this slide. In each year, there's more than a quarter of a million people newly infected with HIV. The total number of infected people is estimated to be 1.7 million, with 84,000 deaths in the year 2006. And then there are 445,000 new TB cases, with 66,000 deaths. And the, as I said before, the collaboration between TB and HIV control programs is often insufficient. Now, prisons are a problem because of their high rates of TB and HIV among prisoners, and this is. But an additional problem is that in Central Asia, the rate of incarceration is very high. A relatively large proportion of the population is in prison. And these are the numbers. In the former Soviet Union countries, there were more than a million prisoners, and among these, there were 82,000 cases of TB, and as you see, the prevalence rate is horrendous. It's very, very high. In Western Europe, the prevalence is a lot lower, but still it's a lot higher than that among the general population. This is the map of Central Asia, so the area that we are talking about in this presentation, with a total population of 56 million people and a lot of different ethnic groups. This slide shows the size of the prison population in three of the Central Asian republics, and as I indicated before, these are high numbers of incarceration and therefore high numbers of prisoners. Uh, This slide shows the TB case notification rate and mortality rate in Kazakhstan. What you see there is a topping of the notification rate in the year 2002, and from then a gradual decline. The mortality rates are the graph there at the bottom. In the TB prison, the rates are a lot higher. The good news is that the rates are declining, but the bad news is that they are still extremely high. The project that is the subject of this presentation, and especially the next one by Joost, is a partnership between the Ministry of Justice, which is very important for the political commitment for a prison project, the prison health authorities, Penal Reform International, that is dealing with human rights and prison reform, AFU, and Joost van der Meer, the next speaker, is the director of AFU, which is specialized in HIV and HIV-TB control, and the KNCV that I represent, that is specialized in TB and TB-HIV control. Thank you for your attention. The presentation will now be continued by Joost van der Meer.
Thank you very much, Martin. For the sake of time, actually, and so since these two presentations are linked, please keep your questions until your presentation is finished. Thank you.
Yes, so I will continue the presentation. Good morning. I hope to be entertaining you as well as Martin did and keep you a bit awake and lively on this early Saturday morning. Because I come from the HIV angle, and many of you may not know our organization, I will take two slides to introduce AIDS Foundation East West, or AFU as we call our abbreviation. We are a Dutch non-governmental humanitarian public health organization, and our main mission is to make an impact on the HIV and AIDS epidemic in Eastern Europe and Central Asia, or to put it differently, the countries of the former Soviet Union. That's where we work. Here is a map of the countries where we work, although this slide is slightly outdated because Mongolia is no longer in our list of countries. Martin has already highlighted some of the data about TB, and I will focus a bit on HIV. There are 1.7 million people living with HIV in Eastern Europe and Central Asia, and 260,000 new infections in 2006 alone. I am very curious what the latest or the upcoming AIDS epidemic update by UNAIDS will show in this region. In contrast to Africa, the HIV epidemics are driven by injecting drug use, not so much by sexual contact, which means that injecting drug users are the group that is most at risk, but also sex workers, who are also often injecting drug users. And because of their inherently mostly illegal activities, they easily end up in prison, so that's how the epidemic concentrates. There are also emerging target groups, men having sex with men, but also street children. A recent survey that we conducted together with UNICEF in Ukraine revealed an HIV rate of 20% and more among street children living in Odessa. Although the prevalence rates of HIV in Eastern Europe and Central Asia are not so high in absolute numbers, the growth rate is very high. It's the fastest growing epidemic in the world. And here on the graph you see the four Central Asian countries. Kazakhstan is the highest, the dark blue line. Then comes Uzbekistan, Kyrgyzstan and Tajikistan. So the growth rate is quite frightening, and even more frightening when you look at the graph here that also shows the growth rate in Russia, but then 5 years back, and you compare the growth rate of Uzbekistan with it, which is almost exactly the same, even a little bit higher. And now Russia has a significant HIV problem. About 1% of the general population has HIV, is the current estimate. So if it shows two things. There is a window of opportunity to do something now, but if we sit back and don't do anything, we will end up with a major problem in Central Asia as well. Martin has also already told some of the challenges in the prison setting in terms of HIV. It is risk behavior and a couple of risk behaviors that accumulate in prison, It's not only injecting drug use, and not only unprotected sex and rape, let's call it like that, because that's what it also often is, but also other practices like tattooing and body piercing with unsafe equipment and sharing other appliances like toothbrushes and razor blades. And of course there are also the fights that contribute to it. There's exposure to tuberculosis and the whole concentration mechanism reveals that in some countries up to 40% of all people registered with HIV are actually in prison. Other challenges are from the side of staff, the knowledge about HIV and also about HIV and TB co-infection is often insufficient. There are high levels of TB and co-infection, 7 to 8%, and the very separated healthcare systems, both the TB and HIV systems that are very much separated in Central Asia, and as well as the non-existing link between society and prison inside and outside presents a challenge. Harm reduction, so needle exchange and substitution treatment with methadone or with buprenorphine is not allowed in most countries. Kyrgyzstan is a good example. It's the best pupil, one can say. And monitoring of actually what we do and what our impact is very difficult in prison because data are classified, some denominators, if we want to know did we really have an impact, how many staff did we train, and how much of all prison staff does this represent, we cannot know because the denominator is classified information. Someone recently asked me, what is actually the role of NGOs in this prison setting? What is your added value? Well, we, and that's not only for AFU, but also local NGOs, partners with which we work, we know our target groups very well. We know that injecting drug users are distrusting the system, but we know where to find them. We know how we can gain their trust. So we have this link with society. We know the target groups. So this is our added value, and the government systems usually have very little attention and also very little experience with it. So this is where our added value comes in. We can provide continuity of care between prison system and outside of prison system, which we call transitional case management. Building a client, a network around the client or a patient, and make sure that all the services this person needs, this person can access. Peer-to-peer approach is another approach that is developed by NGOs and that is that governments have very little experience of, but that generally works very well with this group, and also to make sure that the target groups trust the services given. So, with KNCV and AFU, we decided to have a strategic partnership mainly because it actually mutually strengthens our knowledge and the quality of our work, because we know a lot about HIV, KNCV knows a lot of TB, and you cannot ignore this problem in prison settings. So it's very logical to combine our efforts on that level. And working in Central Asia, of course, in prison systems, we line up with the government. So there is our private-private-public partnership. And the objectives of our program in Central Asia with Dutch governmental funding from 2008 to 2010 is to improve TB case finding among those at risk with HIV. Also improve HIV prevention among TB patients and improve TB prevention and care for people living with HIV, not only in prison settings but also outside. But it makes sense to start things in prison setting because of the highly concentrated epidemic there. The expected outcomes of our program, and I'm talking then by 2010, we will hope to have an HIV-TB transitional case management model in place, so meaning that there's really a continuity of care in the prison system, and when a prisoner gets released, he or she will find that care also outside the prison, in the civil or in the regular healthcare system. The other objective is to have enhanced TB-HIV collaboration. I've already explained to Martin as well that these, they are these pillars of TB and HIV care, and never the twain shall meet almost, that is of course not what we want and what is needed to get a good response. So we hope to have enhanced TB collaboration by setting up interdisciplinary working groups. Increased capacity of service providers in providing care for HIV, TB infection, co-infection, and that is will be achieved by training. So we will see, hopefully, by the end of the program, a knowledge increase. I've seen myself that TB doctors are very in this region are very unfamiliar with the clinical picture of HIV, TB co-infection, so TB in HIV, often looking for cavities or looking for the very specific tuberculosis picture in x-rays, and of course you will not find that. Labs is another underdeveloped part in the region that needs really a lot of support, so we envision to have enhanced laboratory capacity to provide adequate care for HIV and TB co-infection and train lab staff and provide equipment. And finally, of course, the objective is to have universal access for prisoners and all patients with HIV and or TB to adequate medical care. So in setting up this whole transitional case management, we will monitor with a special database the successful referrals. And so we will start with piloting the model of transitional case management and client management with which we already have started in Central Asia, and then expand and support the national working groups and set them up on prison health, train and capacity build medical and support staff, but also set up peer networks in prison of prisoners who do HIV prevention and TB prevention information. Material and technical support, and like I said, involve civil society and patients, because that's also very important to make sure that actually the services that we want to deliver are meaningful to the target groups. Thank you very much. These are the acknowledgements of all people involved in this project.
Thank you, Joost. Any clarifications? The floor is now open for questions, discussion, clarifications. And there are microphones in each aisle. Thank you. Please state your name and where you're from, please.
Okay, good morning. It's Thurma Goldman from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention in South Africa. One of the inmates after they've been released from the prison.
You mean treatment of TB and AIDS?
Both TB and HIV.
There is TB treatment in prisons, or there are special what they call colonies for treating TB patients. In theory, there is also ARV treatment, and in some countries it is happening in prisons. It's starting slowly, but it's actually just starting. And that's what I was referring to as one of the challenges. Actually, a lot of staff and medical staff in prisons is not well prepared to deal with ARV treatment in prisons yet, so and let alone patients. So we have to also get this going in prisons. It's not a matter of only pushing the pills, and the pills are coming in with Global Fund money, but it's also a matter of setting up this whole treatment preparedness efforts and peer adherence groups among prisoners, etc., that has still to be done. So there's a lot of work to be done still.
Good morning. My name is Ashwin Dharmadhikari. I'm from the Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston, Massachusetts, USA. My question is along the same lines as the previous question. I was curious if you can describe what systems exist currently to handle openly infectious patients with TB, for example? Are there infection control measures that are being utilized?
As far as I know, I cannot speak for all prisons, of course, but there is no or very little infection control. So there is that's one of the challenges that we will face, and that we will have to install measures for. There is no, people are just grouped together, so there's not really a policy there. I don't know whether Martin will want to say anything about that, but...
Are you? Good morning. I'm Laedi from São Paulo, Brazil. I'm interested how do you link the patient, the case of patient management when they release prison? What kind of information system? And also, we have so much trouble from one prison to other prison. They are transferred. How do you act?
The vision is to, and we have already started working on that, is to prepare prisoners when they know they will be released in a couple of sessions on their new life in society. And also then list what sort of services and what sort of things they would need once they are released. Then once they are released, so they are prepared, and also in coordination with the health system in prisons, their medical needs are known. Then they will be referred once they are outside to what we call social bureau. That's where a social worker sits. And this social worker then coordinates the care, does an intake, and will coordinate the care of this particular prison. So not only medical needs will be part of this assessment or this intake, but also social needs. Often prisoners are released without giving any papers, so they don't exist, basically, have no access to the healthcare system, so often the priority is to get papers. So this whole coordination will then be done by handled by social bureaus, who are often based in the same area as the prison, and who are providing a service that is relevant for prisoners or the wider target group. So either it's a counseling and testing site, or it's a harm reduction center, or it's something else. That's how we envision it to work, and we have started to set up these social bureaus already.
Thank you.
Last question, please.
Okay. My name is Jean-Pierre Zellweger from the Swiss Lung Association. One of the well-known problems is usually the lack of coordination between Ministry of Health and Ministry of Justice in many countries, particularly in Eastern Europe. My question, where do you start your intervention? At which level? Do you start with an intervention at ministerial level, or do you start your intervention with the director of the local prisons?
We do both. So we work from all levels. So we need political commitment from the highest level, as well as from the prison authority. So we will make sure that Ministry of Health and Ministry of Justice know what we do and agree with it, and then work with prison authorities to also establish this model of care. So you need actually, certainly in these hierarchical systems of Central Asia, you need to really get political support from a high level in order to make an impact, otherwise it is useless to work.
So my simple question is it successful when you intervene at the level of Ministry of Justice? Because in my experience, in some countries, it's just hopeless.
Well, we have actually quite good experiences with Ministries of Justice when it comes to prison health. I don't know why, but we have very good relationships, for instance, with the Russian Guin, and so that's the prison health system on a federal level. And you need that support, otherwise you cannot work. And maybe it's out of enlightened self-interest that they are that we have such a good working relationship, but they really value the interventions and the sort of work that we do, both with prisoners and their staff. To give you an example, there was a lot of talk in Russia about a year ago about registering NGOs, and also international NGOs were a little bit under fire, one can say. So there were also in the Russian press there were some articles about that, and one of the first phone calls we got was from the Gwin, the prison system, saying you can still work in Russia, can't you? I said, yeah, well, yeah, no problem. We had no problem, but so they were really they are really good partners.
Thank you very much, Jos Martin. We'll go for the next presentation from Russian Federation, Arkhangelsk region. Dr. Andrei Melyandis, would you please come to the floor? Basically, all these questions raised that are very, very important and pertinent, and there are some good country examples. So hopefully we can get from these presentations some of the practical examples, and at the end of the discussion, we'll have some, at the end of the presentation, we'll have some time for the discussion. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Masoud. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I want to... just a moment. I forgot to click my presentation. Yeah, thank you. First of all, I want to say thank you for the good opportunity to present data from Arkhangelsk region. And I want to say thank you my colleagues from prison system who are doing very hard work in the medical system for the organization of the MDR-TB control in the prison system. And I want to say that big challenges of MDR-TB control in my region joined with a very good political support from central medical administration, our correction system of medical of Ministry of Justice, my country, and of course our local administration. And I want to say some institute who support implementation of DOTS Plus and DOTS program in my region, and especially I want to say Langhav organization from Norway for the big support in my region. Arkhangelsk region is one of the 83 regions of the Russian Federation and is situated near the White Sea and Arctic Ocean. The total area of the region is the seventh among other biggest oblast, republic, and republics of Russia. It covers 578 square kilometers. The population is 1,300,000. There are about 14,000 people in the penitentiary system. 20 colonies and 4 pretrial centers are located in the different places of the region and are situated from 300 up to 500 from the capital of my region, Arkhangelsk. In the year 1998, DOTS program has been accepted in the Arkhangelsk area. In 2003, DOTS Plus is approved by Green Light Committee. DOTS and DOTS Plus project have been implemented simultaneously in civil sector and in the prison system. Measures of the organization of the DOT treatment were introduced, examining of each patient by smear and culture method was established, and supplying of external quality assurance of the drug susceptible test to the second line drug was introduced in simultaneously in civil sector and in the penitentiary system. Two reference laboratories were established in the regional anti-tuberculosis dispensary and in the penitentiary system. Inpatient department for MDR-TB treatment were made. The unified system of the TB registration of all categories of the cases of the disease and including MDR-TB is organized. The Unified Centralized Doctor Commission supervises the scheme of treatment and the treatment of the side effects of the MDR-TB patient in the civil sector and in the penitentiary system. The amount of the new cases of disease in the Arkhangelsk area as well as in Russia decreased since 2000. In 2006, in my region, it makes up 72 per 100,000 population. The same data in the Russian Federation. The death rate is higher and has started to decrease only since 2005 and make up 15 on per 100,000 population. In the penitentiary system, these figures have been decreased to since 2000, but still exist the level of the epidemic and make up 1,395 per 100,000 prison population. In my region, like in other regions, we have same data in the Russian Federation, in the middle level of the same data in the Russian Federation. The death rate is high too, and make up 115 on per 100,000 prison population. The positive dynamics of the tuberculosis incident is noticed. The reduction of the relapses in the absolute figures, reduction interrupt treatment and failure. You can find in 2001 we had 485 relapses, 88 defaults and 59 failure. In last year we had 197 relapses, 22 default, and only 4 failures. Failure is connected only with MDR-TB cases. TB rates in 2006 in Arkhangelsk region makes up 90 per 100,000 population, 45 by culture and by smear positive, and 33 by smear positive per 100,000 population. More than a third of the cases are among new cases of the disease. Relapses and MDR patients are presented by the cases of disease in the penitentiary system. On this slide, you can see that 2,065 new cases they were registered in last year in the prison system. The same data registered among the relapses and MDR-TB cases. Unfortunately, in the Arkhangelsk region, there is one of the highest index of the primary MDR in the world. In 2006, primary MDR has made up 23%, but it's not connected the same data in our region. Some region in Russia we have 8, 10, some region have less percent of MDR, but unfortunately in my region it's the highest rate of MDR-TB patient. But the highest index in the penitentiary system and every year is increased. As we cured the susceptible tuberculosis very well, and there was no financial opportunity to provide MDR treatment for the all MDR-TB patient. The MDR-TB budget of a patient is increased every year. In 2006, 47% of MDR-TB patient is diagnosed in the penitentiary system. The acquired MDR resistance to the drugs was always higher and made up about 80%. In the 2007, it is also planned to receive MDR-TB growth in the penitentiary system. On this slide, you can see that they registered for the 9th month 2007 33 new cases MDR 33 new cases by culture positive, and among them we found 28 patients with MDR. It's a big percent of patients with MDR. The growth of the MDR-TB was the main cause of the death of the TB patient, especially in the penitentiary system. In the civil sector, more than half of the cases of death has been connected with MDR-TB. And in the penitentiary system, all the patients died from MDR-TB. Last year, it was 15 patients, and it was all the patients with MDR-TB. On this slide, you can find that 54% of patients who died from tuberculosis, it was an MDR-TB patient. Last 2 years, we annually have registered up to 260 MDR-TB patients, and the MDR-TB prevalence made up 565 cases in my region. In the penitentiary system, in 2004, 39 MDR were registered, 28 started the treatment. In 2005, 34 were registered, started the treatment, 26. In 2006, 85 were registered and started the treatment, 71. In 2007, 54 were registered and 52 have started the treatment. The result of treatment is early to discuss, but now 205 patients have started the treatment in the penitentiary system, 129 continued the treatment in prison, 34 have been cured, 29 continued the treatment after the discharge from prison in the civil sector, 4 failed, 4 died, 5 have interrupted the treatment, and 3 XDR-TB is registered. All anti-tuberculosis measures in the penitentiary system are carried out simultaneously with implementation in the civil sector. And we hope for establishment of the control of the MDR-TB distribution. However, 300 patients with HIV are in the penitentiary system. It makes influence of the distribution of tuberculosis and MDR too. We are very grateful for the help of the Green Light Committee, especially for the drug deliveries in my region. But in the prison system, we have organized the treatment with the support of the central administrative medical units of the correction system, Ministry of Justice. And very slow receipt of the drugs through the International Dispensaries Association does not allow us to use the opportunity of the drugs application for the help of the MDR-TB patient in the penitentiary system. Now, we did not organize the treatment for the 49 TB patients in the penitentiary system. We need some additional drugs. And I want to say thank you for the attention.
Thank you very much, Dr. Andrea Marianne. Is there any question for clarification?
Carol Mohan, USAID. I wanted to ask what you're doing for patients that have XDR-TB.
It's a very hard question because I think it's a question for this conference, what we need to do with the XDR patient. Unfortunately, now we only isolate the XDR patient from another patient. But how to organize the treatment, it's category patient, really. It's very difficult. It's a team of team of discussion of working group with MDR, XDR, and really it's very difficult. Now we only separated this as a category of patient.
Norbert Zellweger, Swiss Lung Association. Maybe I missed the point, but could you please clarify who will take charge of the prisoners with TB if they are released from prison before the end of TB treatment? Who will care for these patients?
In my presentation, I tried to repeat many times that implementation of DOTS plus program in my region simultaneously with civil sector and with the penitentiary system. We have a unifying recording, we have a unifying central medical committee, we have a unifying education, and if you patient with tuberculosis must release from prison, they know about this patient, and we continue treat the patient at home, and we have a very good link between the medical service in the penitentiary system in the civil sector.
But more specifically, do you have TB nurses and outreach workers able to visit the patients after they have been released from the prison?
Yes, of course. Yes.
You say, of course. I'm very happy to hear that, because some years ago, it was not of course in some regions. I don't know the region of Arkhangelsk, but in other regions, in Russia, Russian Federation, and in countries close to Russian Federation, it is not of course at all. There are no TB nurses and no community workers, so I'm very happy to hear that you have this opportunity.
Yeah, thank you. I agree fully with you. Before the presentation, I said thank you, my colleagues. Really, it's hard work. I know it's not. I know that in other regions not implementation the same program like in May. Some region implemented dots plus, some region not implemented.
In fact, just to add that one, there are changes. You go and visit the countries, and then you see there's lots of development. Michael, you have some other questions?
Yeah, I had a question. To please explain the laboratory network system, and who does your external quality assurance? Culture DST.
Yeah. Thank you for the question, Michael. Really, it's a key point of the implementation DOTS Plus program. Laboratory insurers, quality insurers of laboratory investigation. Now we have a centralized assurance quality laboratory investigation. And during 4 years, we have a good result of investigation drug susceptible test. Each patient investigated by a culture method, and each patient investigated to resist on first and second line drugs. In the penitentiary system, in the civil sector, it's never mind. It's, if you TB patient, he will investigation by culture method, and drug susceptible test will be done. I know that not all the region strengthening laboratory capacity. Some region we have not good result of investigation of drug susceptible test and culture not investigated in some region. But in my region we investigated for all the TB cases.
Thank you.
Just the last question.
Last, but least, Lana.
Thank you very much. My name is Svetlana Pak. I am from KNC representative office in Kazakhstan. And my question is, because in your presentation I saw that not all MDR-TB patients were put on treatment. So my question is, do you have any criteria for patients who should be put on treatment?
Oh, it's a very, very difficult question. How to organize the treatment if you haven't enough drug supply. It's really, it's very, very difficult question. I am happy that now we have a good opportunity to start treat all the MDR-TB cases, and I hope the next month we will start treatment all the MDR-TB patients in the penitentiary system and in the civil sector, because we received the drugs from Greenlight Committee for 200 MDR-TB patients, and we will start treatment all the TB cases. But when we started DOTS plus implementation in previous year, we decided that we will start treatment first of all patient with MDR new cases, because if you start treatment the patient who first time diagnosis MDR, it's more easy to treat with the patient, and we will have a good result of treatment this category of patient. But another, I could not give advice, because really it's a very difficult question how to organize treatment if you haven't enough drug supplies.
Okay. Thank you very much, Andre. Our next speaker comes from the Republic of Moldova, Dr. Victor Borinci. He is the former National TB Program Director and now is Project Coordinator for the World Bank and Global Fund Programs projects on TB and HIV in the Republic of Moldova. Just back.
Honored Presidium, dear friends and colleagues, it is a pleasure for me to share with you the Moldavian experience in management of TB, MDR-TB and HIV in the country. I think you cannot to divide the activities in prisons from the activities in civilian sector, because these activities provided in both of the sectors are integrated, represented integrated system for control of HIV and TB in Moldova. Moldova is a small East European country. It's former Soviet Union country with a lot of social and political problems. Out of them, I can mention unemployment, massive external labor migration, and, around 1 million people, unofficial data, and frozen Transnistrian conflict. Some of the country development indicators are presented in this slide, including HIV-AIDS prevalence rate and TB notification rate, new cases and relapses, probably one of the highest rate of in Europe. The number of registered TB cases in Moldova has been increasing during the last 10 years. This situation is caused by the spread of TB infection due to the socio-economical problems, but also by improvement of case detection due to the DOTS implementation. DOTS implementation has started since December 2000 in prison sector and since December 2001 in civilian sector. As a result, case detection rate for new smear-positive cases has increased from 19 in 1999 to 65.5 in 2006. The treatment success rate is less than WHO recommendation, is only around 62% in 2005 and for three quarters for 2006. And probably the value of treatment success rate is less due to the weak level of DOAT during continuation phases, only for 70% of patients, but also by the level of registered or diagnosed MDR-TB. Non-representative data for 2005 show that the MDR-TB was between new cases around 13% and between retreated cases 49%. In 2006, a national survey was provided in Moldova. The final report is under preparation, but the previously representative data show that MDR-TB is 19% between new cases and 50.8% between retreated cases. The number of registered TB cases in prison has been increasing during the last 7 years, especially after DOTS implementation in December 2000, which covered 30% of prisons. Since January 2004, when the rest of penitentiary unit have been covered by DOTS. Smear confirmation rate for new pulmonary TB cases has increased from 7% in 2000 to 33% in 2004. TB mortality rate is decreasing, but the number of co-infected TB-HIV cases among DIT TB patients is increasing to 33% in 2006. Treatment success rate in prison sector is less, is under WHO recommendation, especially after extension of DOTS in all prison sector, with high number of transferred and failure patients. Regarding MDR-TB in prison, the survey provided in prison in 2003 with support of Caritas Luxembourg showed that MDR-TB between new cases was 26% and between retreated cases 55%. New data for 2006 will be available at the end of this year. Regarding HIV-AIDS, the number of notified in-country HIV cases has been increasing during the last 12 years, but the number is less than the number estimated by World Bank and UNAIDS, 34,000 for 2006. Due to the effective intervention provided in Moldova in HIV area, but also partially probably by the overestimation. The most important route of transmission of HIV-AIDS between new cases has become since 2004 sexual transmission. The absolute number of AIDS users between new HIV cases is stable. During 2005-2006 is around 200 people. At the same time, incidence of HIV-AIDS among young adults have been increasing during the last 4 years, and probably this trend will remain the same for the next period, especially because of the spread of infection from specific groups, target groups, to the general population. In prison, the number of HIV-AIDS cases under observation is stable during the last years, but the number of cases with co-infection, HIV-AIDS-TB, is increasing. Moldova has two national programs, one for TB and another for HIV-AIDS. Activities in prisons are component part of these two national programs. For national programs, multiple sources of funding have been engaged. National budget covers only around 50% of necessity of TB programs and around 33% of necessity for HIV-AIDS program. The rest are covered by donor organization and international agencies. National TB and HIV-AIDS program are coordinated by country coordination mechanism, which has three levels. Decisional levels, 22 members represented governmental sector, including representative from Ministry of Health and Ministry of Justice, Ministry of Internal Affairs, civil society, UN agencies, and donors. Coordination level, it's CCM Secretariat, and operational level, 10 technical working group, 4 for TB area, 5 for HIV area, and 1 common group is monitoring and evaluation. Each level has very clearly defined responsibilities. At the same time, each player involved in the realization of TB and HIV-AIDS program in Moldova has his specific contributions, managerial, financial, infrastructural, and structural. Achievements in prison in TB area. It does cover all prisons since quarter 1, 2004. You use in Moldova passive case detection by smear microscopy. At the same time, active screening, twice per year X-ray investigation for all prisoners. Prison sector use anti-tuberculosis drugs and fixed dose combination. Directed DOAT is assured in intensive phase and in continuation phase. Treatment or co-monitoring for each TB cases under treatment. And involvement of volunteers for early TB detection. It's a project funded by Carl Lux, NGOs Carl Lux. Its activity has started in, and KNCV activity has started in 2005-2006. DOTS Plus project has started in quarter one 2006. It is mistaken presentation. Now we have 34 patients on treatment, out of 122 under observation in prison sectors. A conversion rate through culture after 9 months of treatment is around 63%. Also, training of medical staff in DOS, DOS Plus, and the management of Second Light has been provided. Recruitment of medical equipment, reagents, continuous supply with first-line drugs, second-line drugs, but not all necessities are covered now in country for treatment of patients with MDR-TB. Assure adherence to DOTS Plus treatment. It's project financed through the money of the Global Fund grant. Assure the continuation to of DOTS treatment for patients after release. It's project financed by KNCV. And 72% of prisoners after release continue the treatment in civilian sector. In HIV area, you have in places needle exchange program, which covers 6 prisons with 35% of all detainees from Moldova. The number of detainees in Moldova is around 9,000. Visa Transnistria region, which have a separate penitentiary system. Substitution therapy, the project has started last year. It's covered now 3 prisons. We have only 51 patients on substitution therapy. And peer-based education on prevention of HIV/AIDS. Antiretroviral treatment is available in prison sector since October 2006. Now AIDS is manageable chronic disease. Also, you have permanent supply with medicine to assure prevention therapy for opportunistic infection. Success factor in Moldova, probably program intervention in HIV and TB area are comprehensive, in cooperation and active involvement by all stakeholders, governmental sector, civil society, donors, and UN agency, and long-term financial support. Thank you for your attention.
We'll now take questions from the audience.
Thank you for your presentation. If I understand correctly, the data that you gave about the penitentiary system and the MDR-TB rates, for instance, they do not include Transnistria?
No. It's only for Moldova, without Transnistria.
Can you say something about the situation in Transnistria? Do you know anything about that in terms of MDR rates in prisons?
Okay. If you told about TB program, you have a good cooperation with people from penitentiary system from Transnistria. They have started implementation of DOTS in 2004. They covered all prison sector of Transnistria. They have medicines, they have consumables, they use the same standard investigation. Regarding MDR-TB, we don't have enough medicine for Moldova. In Transnistria, MDR survey wasn't made at the moment. We don't have data about MDR in Transnistria.
Can I ask another question? You showed some data about heterosexual transmission now taking over from, let's say, transmission through drug use. Do you know in how far that is sexual transmission through, let's say, bridging populations? Like, is the sexual transmission from, is it women who have a partner who uses drugs, or is it pure sexual transmission, not related in any way to drug use?
Is it sexual transmission? Is not sexual transmission between partners of ID users. Mm-hmm. You have a very high level of pregnant women diagnosed with HIV infection, with around 100 people per year. It's very high level for Moldova.
Thank you.
Question, please.
I'm Miranda Brouwer, working for Health Alliance International in Mozambique. You were talking about using volunteers for early detection. I would like to know a bit more how you use those volunteers, what they do, and how you recruit them.
Okay, this is a project financed by KNCV in Moldova. The responsible TOIT is a representative of medical service in the prisons. They select the volunteers from the detainers who have a trainings in activities to diagnose the symptomatics, the people who cough more of 3 weeks, and these volunteers work in a specific unit when they are. For these activities, the volunteers are stimulated some food parcels each month.
Thank you.
I have a question for you, please. Do you have any problems with registration of drugs in your country for treatment of second line, and or do you have access to all the drugs or at least drug categories?
No. The second line drugs in Moldova are delivered through the GLC mechanism. You have approved now 700 people for treatment till 2009. We don't register the drugs in Moldova, second-line drugs. You can use the special decision of Ministry of Health to use these drugs because they are very important drugs for health system for Moldova.
Okay. Question?
Thank you. Very good presentation. I am from Afghanistan. As I learned from your presentation, your service delivery is integrated in the district level, in the implementation level. So I am quite worried about the infection. Maybe HIV/AIDS patient who is going to test for for tuberculosis. So in the same facility, there is so much, the patient will get infection of tuberculosis external. So do you have any appropriate mechanism to control, to avoid those infection?
In prison sector or in civilian sector?
In prisons and also in general population.
In general population, you have a vertical system of physiopneumological TB services. The people from HIV are under observation of another specialist who is infectionist. In prison sector, it is difficult because the infection control condition was not so good. And is not excluded it exists a transmission infection in facilities.
I believe we have a question on the far left, please. Just begin to speak and it should open up.
Oh. Thank you. My name is Isaac Skosana from CHMT South Africa. What I've been hearing mostly is like the success regarding the screening, is it happening internally or outside of the private sector? And two, We've been also hearing about the treatment, the medication. What about the nutrition? Is it also sufficient nutrition inside the prison? And lastly, the cell-sharing situation. Can you give us the light on that? Maybe how many prisoners per cell that are sharing in a cell? Thank you.
Probably about nutrition. I think for prisons, maybe it is a problem, but some donors support the patient under the treatment, especially under the DOTS Plus treatment. Through the money of the Global Fund, you have additional parcel of nutrition for these patients.
The second question had to do with screening. Could you clarify, did you mean screening inside the prison or outside the prison? I wasn't sure. It had to do with screening.
In terms of the screening, I mean the diagnostics. Is it happening inside? Because that's so far what we know. We do have the prisons, the hospital inside the prisons where there will be doctors available. Or is it the question is, when the prisoners are diagnosed for TB, is it happening internally or outside? Are sent outside or internally?
The prisoners I investigated and diagnosed for TB and prison facilities. You have a big hospital for 300 beds for TB in the prison sector.
Okay. Thank you. Last question on the left.
Yes, my name is Mutsidisi Lochenberg. I'm from South Africa. What I need to find out is on the DOTS. I'm not sure if I misunderstood, but you said that the DOTS is done by volunteers. I would like to find out who are these volunteers. Is it the prisoners themselves? Is it the officials? Or is it people from the outside that are brought in to do the DOTS?
Like volunteers are the prisoners. Okay.
Who?
Prisoners.
Prisoners.
Yes.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, we'll proceed with the next...
Sure, that these experiences are being reflected in the guidelines. And also with the latest recommendations, namely, for example, for diagnosis, there is no need for 3 sputum examination or 2 would be sufficient. So that sort of technical issues, as you said, we should have the synergy in the new guidelines. The contributors editor committee is KNCB, I put in alphabetical order, KNCB Union, Michael is sitting here, and Dr. Malgosha and myself, we're doing as editorial committee. Writing committee from CDC, ICRC, KNCB, MSH Union, and WHO. On the review committee, FU, ACE Foundation, FES, country representatives, so we're going to send these guidelines to countries and ask for the inputs. To see how much it's understandable for them, and also MSF, MSH, PAHO, WHO. I would urge all of you who are interested at the end of the session, please come to us if you're interested to be part of the review. The new guidelines will have 4 kind of parts, introduction basically, part 1, the background information, part 2, management of TB, all the technical issues, and also part 3, the programmatic aspects. The introduction part is going to talk about the audience, who is going to be using these guidelines, how it should be used, its limitations, or its best use, and also the structure of the guidelines in the introduction part. The background information, we're going to have 3 chapters, the global burden and principle of TB control, TB burden in prisons, so we try to get as much as evidence we have and the latest information we have. And also the health system in prisons, and the link that was raised during questions should be there. The management of TB in prison is starting with a case finding, standard case definitions, a treatment for non-resistant cases, the TB-HIV, including the diagnosis, HIV testing policies, and also going to drug-resistant TB with the whole management part of it, And it's good that the MDR-TB guidelines being updated so we can use all the latest NICAR recommendations and feed it to the guidelines. And also the monitoring the treatment outcome. On programming the aspects, you'll have these chapters, which is we try to follow those this mentioned on the Stop TB strategy. We also look at the most of them more important to the prison guidelines. So political commitment, follow-up of release prisoners, the comprehensive discharge plan, some people call it the continuum of care, which is a major issue, and we saw that in Moldova they have 72%, I think we should congratulate them, it's a good one. It's very difficult to follow patients after they're released. And there are some country examples that you could also bring it here. Medical drugs, supplies, consumables, infection control, M&E and the programming issues, and the involving patient and communities. We heard from Moldovan experience that they have prisoners, ex-prisoners, as volunteers to make create a link here. So that's also on the health education, peer-to-peer education, so on. And also at the end, last but not least, some ideas for operational research. We all know about the screening and other issues that there is a need for more operational research. So hopefully we can provide some good examples and ideas for the countries so they can go for operational research. What are the next steps on updating guidelines? Draft guidelines should be sent to a review committee by December 2007. And actually, I should here tell that we had to wait quite a long time since last year. We did it on purpose because we wanted to make sure the consensus are made on the several issues. And the TB handbook that has been published, that can also help us with to make sure that we have already the latest recommendation. The draft will send also to the editing for in January. And also we decided to first post it an electronic version because printing guidelines by WHO can be very cumbersome these days and may take time while the countries need these new guidelines. So as soon as possible, once we finalize, we try to put it on the line so people can use it while the WHO is going to proceed with the administrative issues to print them. Last but not least, actually, I would like to talk shortly about the Health in Prison project. This is based in Copenhagen. It's a project established in 1995, hosted by WHO Euro, which is in the collaboration with the Department of Health UK. Dutch government also has been funding some part of it. And the mission of this project is to bridge the gap between the prison health and public health. It's not only dealing with TB, but also many other issues. And the idea is to promote evidence-based interventions and projects and to make sure there's exchange of experience between countries in the region. It's something that, as far as I know, we don't have it in other regions. There's much of interest, rightly, to TB in prison in Europe, but we try to promote it in other regions, but not often very easy to do that. So the hope that this could be actually an example for other countries. And this health in prison, once per year they meet. And each year there's one subject. So last year, TB in prison was a subject. And there's a network meeting so that all the countries can get in together and exchange experiences, discuss one subject per year. And so we came up with a status paper. I think some call it white paper. We have the guidelines, but this is very technical. But we need something for the policy makers and those who are not technically technical involved in TB, but they are very, very important for TB control. So the target audience is just policy makers, those who are implementing, but this is not a guideline. It should be very concise and give some examples how you can organize the TB-related issues. You should also show the minimum standards that is needed. And a good thing with this white paper or status paper vis-à-vis the guideline is that there's a national ownership. So the countries launch it. For example, Romania last time launched it, Netherlands launched it. So the launch of it is that it's kind of endorsement by the national authorities, the health prison authorities, that say, okay, we endorse this one into our setting. And it's because it's generic, but it's just set the standards, it's always useful to have. Thank you very much for your attention. Look forward to have your inputs for the guidelines. Thank you very much.
Any questions about what Dr. Masood presented. There will be a TB in prisons work group meeting on Sunday, tomorrow, in room 161.
Drug use in prisons, I'm sure that's probably included, but just for people's information, WHO, UNAIDS, and UNODC are holding a working group meeting to finalise draft guidelines on managing TB and HIV together in injecting drug users next week, I think, in Copenhagen. And it would be useful to link that document in with the TB in prisons guidelines.
Thank you very much, Alistair. I think it's a very good suggestion, taken, definitely. And I would like very much your inputs on the section for the IDUs. It would be very important. Thank you.
Jos?
Thank you, Master, for your presentation. I have just a very practical question. When you publish the guidelines, will they be available in Russian at the same time?
They should be definitely translated to Russian, and we hope that you can also get fund to have it translated. But the first version will be English, but it will be definitely translated at least to Russian, and hopefully to other languages as well later on. But that's it.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. We will proceed with the next lecture. Will be from Indonesia, Dr.
So, thank you very much, Kamaling. Good morning. It is a real pleasure to present on behalf of the NTP managers of Indonesia, Dr. Kamil Basri, because she's going back to Indonesia and to attend the meeting also in the other country to discuss about the global funds issue. Well, I think I just wanted to share a little bit experience about TB in prison in Indonesia, because even we have been starting the program since 2003, and I think Dr. Michael's involved in the developing and establishing this program, but I guess it's quite slow, the progress in this project in Indonesia. Right, so this has just to remind you, the second strategic plan of TB control in Indonesia, we have equitable quality dots for all and try to expand the TB control. And this one, the program of intervention program is improving quality of dots and as well as the for the poor and vulnerable population. Here's the demographic and health facility related to TB control. So, large country with a high number of population. This is data about the prisons and prisoners until December 2006. So we have around 500 prisons. We divided it into prisons and detention units. This detention unit has the like inmate, but before having judgment from the justice. And this is the distribution of the prison for the entire Indonesia. Why do we expand those to the prison? Because as we know, there are vulnerable groups and also the high transmission, high risk of developing of the disease, and also health matters in prisons is very, very neglected. The organizational charge of the penitentiary system here. So the program is belong to Director of Health Affairs and in collaboration also with Director of Narcotic Affairs. A little bit raw data about the disease in prison. So we found the number of cases HIV, TB and hepatitis here. But actually, this is only raw data we've taken from the several prisons. Here we have less than 10% prison with DOT, and unfortunately, it's DOT, we call it DOT in prison, but in reality, it's not a perfect. It's just the we have been trained the prison staff. But the implementation, the DOTS is quite still full. And this the process of the developing or establishing the program, as I said, it's since 2003. However, this progress is still slow. 2001, we have had the MOU between the CDC, Ministry of Health, and DG from the Department of Law. And then we try to conduct many workshop, and unfortunately we have also had the concern when the Global Fund raised, so some activities being delayed. And then finally, 2007, we have launched the strategic plan of TB in prison. Nowadays, we are progressing the developing the training module, and we plan to conduct the training in the following month. So this is the program chart of TB in prison. Basically, in the provincial level, we have the teams, those provincial team, and it consists of the person from the Department of Law, and then also the prison's director is part of the team, and we have also provincial health officer who in charge of TB control program, and we have district and provincial TB supervisor, we call WASOR. And go to the lower level, we have the DOTS implementation teams on prisons. It consists of the health staff and other staffs, and also what is the prisons units perform is done is screenings, smear collection and fixation, and diagnosis and treatment, and also conduct the reporting and recording, contact investigation, and also IAC. This is a little bit network. We put the prison as the satellite health center. So all the slide, smear slide, just sent to the health center to be read by the lab technician and sent back to the prison. And the drug is available at the district level, district health office, and every quarter, prison unit requests the drugs to the districts, and recording, reporting, but also in, conducted by the prison. We have had the 17 target prisons for the following year, and the results from 2003, we have gained the commitment from the DG of prison, and also the strategic plans TB in prison actually already launched, and the tools for assessment we have had the, in the country, and also we already built the linkage between the other six stakeholders, especially in terms of the implementation TB HIV with Family Health International, ICLC, and other stakeholders. Nowadays, we conduct several workshops on TB-HIV, and also we have the draft of TB-HIV policy guideline, and also the draft for the implementation guideline, the TB-HIV working group already established. We have the plan for the next quarter, and several challenges that we are facing is lack of time because limited number of staffs, and also other challenges is most in administration, and also communication among stakeholder between the stakeholder and the at the Ministry of Health and Ministry of Law, and prison system itself is a big challenge because prison itself they have a unique system. It really depends from the Ministry of Health system. For instance, how they provide the food, how provide the health services for the inmates is becomes a challenge for us and workload of our staff. The most important thing is fund sustainability after donor. We don't know after the global funds leave from the Indonesia, so it's a big challenge for us. That's why we have some recommendation. We try to reorganize the management and supporting system and also developing communication system amongst stakeholders and again to manage resources and follow up TB HIV activities and try to share the workload, and we continue gain the technical assistance from the international expert. We also, due to the limited of staff, we try to recruit the technical officer under TB CAPS, KNCB, and we intensify communication. For the next work plan, we will conduct the situation analysis on the 17 target prisons, and after we have the document of situation analysis, we will develop for the work plan next year. Developing a working group is maybe hopefully this December will be established and disseminate the strategic plans to the all province and prisons, and followed by the trainings for the prison health staff, and then try to implement the program, as well as we monitor and evaluate the programs together and or in collaboration with the other stakeholders. Thank you very much.
Questions for our speaker from Indonesia? I have one comment. I think, as he mentioned, that that even though there's been DOTS training, there is no really DOTS in prisons yet in Indonesia, and what he's referring to is the fact that sometimes you can start with training, but you don't have your strategic plan. And that's one of the important lessons that we've learned from the experiences in Indonesia, the importance of really having a strategic plan for implementation prior to generalized training of health staff. Maybe you could comment.
Yes, what I mentioned before, that there were the DOTS in prisons based on the number of prison staff trained, but this only several province. That's initiative from the provincial health office to involve the prison staff to be trained. It's not nationwide and it's not a national policy, because the policy and the strategic plan develop in following year.
Thank you. Very important, because Indonesia is a very, very large country in Asia. Please.
Thank you very much for the presentation. I'm Dr. Ongozi Njepome from Nigeria. I just wanted to clarify the picture you showed of four prisons sending samples to a hospital, to the lab, and then it goes back to the district hospital before the result goes back to the prison. Is this hospital a hospital in the prison, or is it an outside hospital, public hospital? Because I think that we need to build capacity of health workers in the hospitals within the prisons to be able to make a diagnosis of tuberculosis. And secondly, considering the overpopulation that usually exists in some prisons, like in Nigeria, how do we address the issue of MDR? Because it's a very serious problem if it gets into the prisons. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much from the negative questions. This networking is just to show that this prison is very limited, I mean, in terms of diagnosis. And also due to the limited staff of the prison, I think only less than 10% the prison have the health staff, for instance, nurse, lab technicians, or medical doctor. That's why we just train the staff, prison staff, for the laboratory until making the fixation. So then after they make the preparation for the make a fixed session, then send to the other health facility. It can be a health center with microscopy, can be hospital, and the result from the smear send back to the prison. Then the prison will request the drugs to the district health office. Does it make sense?
And then about treatment of MDO.
Can you
treatment of MDO?
Give more explanation? Because you're above.
No, there is no treatment of MDR now in the prisons. There is in the private sector, but not yet in the public sector in Indonesia. And they're undertaking a large national survey, the first one now, of DST in Indonesia. So there is, as of yet, no national data.
Yeah, in terms of India, we haven't had the data because currently the result of surveys being finalized.
The issue he raises about where the slides go and where the hospital is, it raises the issue of the lack of resources in many countries for prisons. And so it's a question of then does the Ministry of Health provide those resources or is it the prison sector itself? And so that is a good example in Indonesia where there's a basic issue about resources, access to resources. Whereas in other large countries, like in the former Soviet Union, Russia, there are very large, well-developed medical systems that operate as a structure within the prison sector. That's not true in a lot of areas, and it's certainly not true in Indonesia. Thank you.
Thank you.
So our next presentation is from ICRC, Georgia, Dr. Shalala.
Dr. Shalala Ahmedova is from Georgia, working for ICRC. So, Azerbaijan from ICRC, International Committee for Red Cross. ICRC has been very much involved in TB control in across the region, and they have a holistic approach. They also try to look through renovation if needed, and creating good laboratories, especially in two or three countries that have a very good laboratory that also have a good link with the external quality control.
India TB treatment increased in South Azerbaijan.
Speak into the microphone.
Sorry. Good morning. India TB treatment in prisons of Azerbaijan. Just for information, that one of the authors of the presentation, Dr. Rafael Mitiev, head of main medical department of the Minister of Justice of Azerbaijan, is also present in this hall. Therefore, at the end of the presentation, if you will have any questions, you can address them to him and to me also. I will start my presentation with the short information about my country. Azerbaijan is situated in the South Caucasus on the borders of the Caspian Sea. Population is just under 8.5 million. And Azerbaijan regained its independence in 1991 after the collapse of the Soviet Union. Approximately 5,000 TB cases are reported to the WHO each year, and about 700 TB cases start treatment in prisons each year. There are 22 penitentiary institutions nationwide with a prison population of approximately 6,000. Then I will give a short information about the International Committee of about the cooperation of the International Committee of the Red Cross and the Minister of Justice of Azerbaijan. In 1995, International Committee of the Red Cross and the Minister of Justice of Azerbaijan decided to cooperate in setting up a pilot DOTS project in prisons of Azerbaijan. The objectives were to provide a full, supervised, complete and correct treatment to 300 detainees and to demonstrate that the DOTS is applicable in prisons. Then in 1998, Minister of Justice, they approved DOTS protocol, and after that a tripartite agreement was signed between the Minister of Justice, Minister of Health and the ICIC. In this chart, you see that during all these years, treatment success rate among new and previously treated cases always fluctuated between, among the new cases fluctuated between the 50 and 65%, and among the previously treated cases between 30 and 50%. A lot of factors contributed to the low treatment success rate in prisons, including the, in some years, high default rate because of amnesty released and some administrative reasons. But the main contributor is the high level of the drug-resistant TB. And the same DRTB rate among new cases in prisons 2005, 2006, and 2007. In 2006, it was 10.2%. In 2006, 15.6%. And for 2007, we have the interim results, which is 11.3%. This is the among previously treated cases, 40% in 2005, 44.9%, it has increased in 2006, and interim results show for 2007, 33.8%. Resistant to the second-line anti-TB drugs in prisons, 2005. 6% of new bacterial gram-positive patients were resistant to the second-line anti-TB drugs. And 17.3% of previously treated cases were resistant to the second-line drugs. Just to remember these figures, because then I will give the comparison with the civilian sector. For 2006, resistance to the second-line among the new bacterial gram-positive patients has decreased a bit. It became 4.9%. But the resistance to the second-line anti-TB drugs among previously treated cases has increased and became 26.6%. This is the interim results of the drug resistance survey in Azerbaijan, which was conducted in the civilian sector. This survey started in August 2006, and it shows the high prevalence of the MDR-TB rate among new cases and previously treated cases. And these figures are higher than the prison sector. There is some explanation for that, because the prison sector started the DOTS implementation in 1995, but the civilian sector accepted DOTS nationwide in 2000. And at the same time, the civilian sector so far does not have the national reference laboratory. And according to this drug resistance survey, approximately 14% of the MDR-TB patients are XDR-TB patients. And again, in the civilian sector, if we will compare it with the prison sector, we can see that the resistance to the second-line anti-TB drugs among the new bacteriological positive patients is higher. In prison sector, it was approximately 6%, 4.9%, but in civilian sector, 14.3%. And to the previously treated cases, also it's higher, 43.8%. And XDR, as you see, that as a percent of MDR-TB, among new cases, 5.9% in new cases and 14.3% among previously treated cases. Just also for information, DOTS Plus project started in the prison sector. Civilian sector does not have any DOTS Plus projects so far. In 2004, Minister of Justice applied to the Green Light Committee to start a pilot DOTS Plus project. In 2005, GS application was approved. In 2005, Minister of Health requested the WHO to provide the technical support to prepare the TB proposal for round 5. And 2006, the TB Global Grant was signed. Finally, on the 25th of April 2007, MDR-TB treatment in prisons of Azerbaijan started. Actually, it means that it started in Azerbaijan. And up to 16th of October, 52 detainees have been enrolled to treatment. This is just pictures from the laboratory that International Committee of the Red Cross helped the Minister of Justice to upgrade the laboratory, and this laboratory actually right now acts as a national reference laboratory, has the capacity to do the full range of TB procedures. This laboratory is performing the sputum smear microscopy, then cultures on solid and liquid media, and DSP for the first line and second line drugs. As this laboratory has been participating in external quality assurance with the Georgia National Reference Laboratory on sputum smear microscopy since 2001, and with the, on DSP with the Borsa Supranational Laboratory since 2003. Just recording reporting forms. Each patient has a separated patient file and treatment facility. Just to mention that the political commitment from the Minister of Justice side is very high, and from the government, the Cabinet of Ministers allocated $115,000 in order to rehabilitate the MDR-TB ward. And with the financial support of the Global Fund, mechanical ventilation system was installed. Just patient adherence. A lot of health education materials on drug-resistant TB treatment was developed jointly by the ICIC and the Minister of Justice. Human resources. For the time being, the three Minister of Justice doctors and three nurses are involved, and each week, different specialists are invited in order to solve some effects, some problems related with the side effects of the second line drugs. Just this information covers 52 patients who have been enrolled to the treatment. As there were always MDR-TB patients in prison, they were kept in a separate respiratory isolation ward before the start of the MDR-TB treatment. Some of them have waited for the treatment more than 5 years. There were only two ways to go out of this ward, only death or release. Therefore, Minister just started to treat the patients who have been waiting for a long period of time. And 27 of them have already in the past received first and second line anti-TB drugs. And they have received many times category 2 treatments. You can see from the percent. And the number of treatment interruptions during category 2 treatments, 73% have never interrupted the treatment in the past. Characteristic of MDR-TB patients at the enrollment to treatment. As the treatment started in prisons, and most of you know that the prisoners, they don't only have the TB disease, they have a bunch of diseases. And one patient is HIV positive, and actually he's responding to the treatment, and 48% used the drug in the past. The major problem is the high prevalence of hepatitis C. We have never thought before that we will face this problem when starting DOTS Plus project. Approximately 54% are infected with hepatitis C. And also hepatitis B, in comparison to hepatitis C, not widely spread. And if you will see also glucose level, also in 15% they have the high level of the glucose. Yeah, we have been interested why there is a high level of hepatitis C in prisons, and when we made some interviews with the patients, we found out that 75% were the injecting drug users in the past. Just this different. We have one XDR-TB case, and so far he is responding to the treatment. Up to now, this is just interim results because the Minister of Justice started the treatment only in April 2007. And among 42 checked patients, 73.8% became smear negative, but in different months. And 31 smear negative patients are culture negative, approximately 42%. Most common side effects, as usual, nausea, hypokalemia, arthralgia and hepatitis. That's a major problem is the hepatitis. Challenges, non-existence of the DOTS Plus project in the civilian sector. Therefore, ethical issues arise that as there will not be follow-up of the treatment in the civilian sector, only the detainees are enrolled to the treatment or who have more than 2 years sentence. And again, ethical issues, it means that it is the incentives for the crime or incentives for the grave crime. And high level of hepatitis C and consequently difficulties in management of toxic hepatitis. That's all. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much, Dr. Akhmedova. Again, I apologize for not mentioning you from Azerbaijan. For the sake of time, would it be possible to invite all the presenters of today to come to the podium? You can also take a seat here. And then we'll take the floor is open for discussion. All the presenters of today, would you please come to the podium?
And the number of incarcerated people in your prisons.
In Azerbaijan, the TB notification rates, case notification rates is going down in prisons, and the number of them, also prison population is going down.
So is the decrease in TB notifications in prisons due to control, or is it due to mass release of prisoners, for example? For you, and then also I'd like to hear about Russia and Kazakhstan.
Yeah, it is because of the better organization of the TB services in prisons. Actually, DOTS implementation in prisons of Azerbaijan is very strong, and active case finding activities were introduced. And also health education activities. Just one link was not enough. It was the treatment of the NDRTB patients. Actually, we can say that the TB services is strong in prison sector.
Andre, in Russia, do you have any comments?
I can confirm the main idea is that really if your number of prisoners decrease, the number of TB cases decrease simultaneously. It's, of course, because it's drawing number of inmates and number of TB cases. But I can confirm that DOTS program in the prison system in my country implemented very fast. And I know that you have information too. The central medical units of Ministry of Justice implemented the DOTS and DOTS Plus program in the prison system in my country. And it's linked to if you reorganize the DOTS program in the penitentiary system, they decrease the number of TB cases. I think both the reason to influence.
The equitable services between the civilian sector and the prison sector. Maybe you understood from my presentation as a paradox that the TB services in prison sector is much better than the civilian sector. Therefore, even for the ICRC, we also made the general objective to make the equitable services which corresponds to the civilian sector, but later we saw that there is a huge gap is developing between these services. Of course, on the other hand, it is not good because the prison services should be part of the National Tuberculosis Control Program, and but maybe we should think out of the box. It doesn't matter where the model exists. Now in country, model exists in the penitentiary system, and this model can be transferred to the civilian sector. And for the time being, the Minister of Justice is providing the technical support to the Minister of Health so that they can upgrade their services. Actually, GLC recently has refused the Minister of Health to start the DOTS Plus project, pilot project, just for 50 patients, even though there is a high level of the MDR-TB. But Minister of Justice, taking into consideration the national interest, they wrote the letter to the GLC, and they took the responsibility that they will provide the lab services to the civilian sector so that the civilian sector can start the pilot project treating 20 patients. Therefore, in Azerbaijan, we see a quite different approach to the problem. That's all.
Thank you. So Azerbaijan is an example of the prison sector driving improved. So I'll ask Andrei to address any of the issues that were raised by the questions.
I'd like to respond to the question. Together with KNCV, promote prisoners' rights and the right to decent treatment. But on the other hand, we know that in some of the countries in Central Asia, this is a very far reality and will be not so easy to achieve. In terms of stigma, I think you've answered that question, but in terms of the incentive for prisoners to get TB or even HIV, I know that in some prisons in Siberia and probably also in Central Asia, there is a trade in sputa from TB patients, so that this is really a problem that has to be controlled and tackled as well. So that is a reality that we have to face.
Other panelists to respond to any of those questions? I've also seen incentives to get disease on the civilian sector side as well in some countries, especially where food or cash was given to individuals to comply with treatment or to get treatment. Then that also led in the civilian sector, especially in very impoverished areas, for people to continue to show a positive smear status, for example. So.
Okay, and we obviously is an issue to discuss it further. And also I was looking at the poster presentation. There are some deserved applause. Thank you very much.